And joining me now on Inside Ivy Hoops is a very special guest, not someone who reaches us from the hardwood, but instead from the heart, Penn's university chaplain and noted fan of Penn basketball, Chaz Howard. Thank you so much for taking time out to be on the podcast. How are you, Chaz?
Hey, man, it's my joy and privilege and honor and pleasure to connect with you. You know, Inside Ivy Hoops, y'all are one of the go-to sources for me. And now preseason analysis and in-season analysis of what's happening in the league. So I really appreciate the work that you and all the writers there on your team do.
Well, the honor is ours, truly, I can assure you. I feel like the people who support the folks who make Ivy Hoops happen, those who champion the champions are just as important as the champions themselves. And as somebody who supports the Penn athletic community and pretty much anyone who needs support of Penn, you definitely fit that category and then some. And so I wanted to talk with you about how faith and sports intersect and coexist and dynamics that are a bit more meaningful than last weekend's box scores. You're an avid supporter of Penn basketball. I think a lot of Penn folks know that. Why is that? What makes you a fan of Penn basketball in particular?
I think it's sort of threefold. You know, it's my alma mater. You know, I went there, and I love Penn as a student, and I had a great experience there and went to a lot of games when I was, you know, 18 to 22, and knew a lot of guys on the team back then. They were friends. So I think that's kind of the first reason why I think I'm a fan. You cheer for the schools that you went to. I still cheer for my old high school back in Baltimore, and in the same way, I still cheer for my college alma mater. That's part one. Part two, I think it's where I work. And when I cheer for the guys on the floor and for the women on our women's team, I'm mostly cheering for my students. You know, I have the privilege of teaching some of the folks in the teams. And I'm cheering for my friends who are on the sidelines there too. And then thirdly, I just love the tradition of what is Penn basketball, as well as a Philadelphia resident now. I love the Big Five. I love the sort of great city of basketball that Philly is, and Penn plays such a role in that here. And I just, as a fan of the city and as a fan of this great, you know, multi-decade tradition, it's a joy to kind of be in the palestra and cheer for these guys and these women.
Yeah, and speaking to that tradition, I've always found it a bit curious. I don't know if curious is the right adjective, but certainly notable that the Palestra is known widely as the cathedral or the mecca of college basketball, as if it's a sacred dwelling that has spiritual and religious connotations for people. And I asked former Penn basketball standout Ibrahim Jabber one time about that, and he said, well, you know, it says something about the history of the Palestra and, you know, the knowledge of those who came through there that, you know, Mecca is recognized as a very, very sanctified religious place by non-Muslims, of course, from his perspective. And it gave him a sense of pride to hear that people called this place the Mecca of basketball. How do you feel about that that label?
I love that. He's a good brother, man. He's as good a man as he is a ball player. So it makes me smile to hear his name invoked. I love it. You know, I think we often throw around religious language too easily sometimes, but I don't think it's in vain when we talk about the Palestra. You know, it really is a sacred space, and I don't have any illusion. It's not the Vatican. It's not the real Mecca. It's not the Western Wall. It's not that yet. It is a set apart space on our campus, in our city, and in kind of college basketball lore. And you know, religious scholars talk about what is it that makes a space holy. In one sense, any church or synagogue, temple, masjid, they're just bricks. You know, they are literally just bricks and mortar and metal, in the same way any old house or any old office building is that. But there's something else that makes it special, and it's what happens inside there. It's the way that it's perceived. It's who's been in there. It's the stories that kind of made holy. And so, you know, a church is made holy because of what goes on in there and because of what does not go on in there as well. And so over the years, I think the flesh has become holy because part, if you walk around the hallway, as you have, man, you know, you see these legends. And some of them are Philly legends, and some of them are sort of national legends, and their pictures are there, and some of them are the stories of come from behind winds and students storming the court and cutting down nets. And it's, you know, it's the famous things of people who end up going pro. It's sort of when Kobe's there. It's also like the Catholic League championship that goes there, and, you know, one or two of those guys end up playing college, and very few end up sort of going pro. But those stories people tell for years. I think that's what makes a place holy. Not to mention just the sort of joy and the roar of the crowd that can be in there. It really is a sacred part of our campus and of our city. I think of basketball, and I love hearing other coaches talk about how important it was for their players to get a chance to kind of play in the Palestra. You know, it's on so many players' bucket list. Cameron, Rupp, Palestra, all sorts of spots. It's a neat perk of working and studying at Penn that I cherish.
Yeah, the history there cannot be ignored. You're right. It's another perspective of history that I wanted to talk with you about is Ivy League sports. There's always been, to me, a fascinating tension between wanting to strive for success, but trying to keep sports at the same time in its proper perspective, whether it was, you know, de-emphasizing football, obviously, you know, not having athletic scholarships. Certainly on the football sides, still no playoffs. On the basketball side, there's a wariness of, you know, big time corporate sponsored, commodified college basketball, and even more so of college football. And yet we want intense competition. We want, we like sports. We want to see, you know, we want to see the game. And from an, and then taking an even broader perspective, adding faith to the mix, taking this tension beyond the realm of, you know, athletic conferences into something higher, can a platform for intense and sometimes, you know, heavily corporate sponsored competitions such as collegiate sports somehow actually be a tool for humility and strengthening faith, do you think? I mean, obviously the Palestra gives a very communal experience. But how do faith and collegiate sports intersect for you?
It's a beautiful question, man, that is worthy of a book. I think really it's such an important intersection. I mean, you know, I think over the years I've seen that, you know, college sports mean different things to different people, even within the same program. You know, my cousin ended up playing football for Stanford. And, you know, major program in a school that's not dissimilar from Ivy League schools. Yet, you know, playing in that Pac-10, Pac-12, nationally televised, competing for a national championship, pre-NFL program. And I remember talking to him, and, you know, in one sense, the football program at schools like that is a business. And there's it loses some of the sacredness and kind of joy of the game. On the other hand, you talk to any of those guys in the locker room, you know, they get to move between play and all the joy of doing the same thing they did when they were 10 in the backyard, and kind of like the camaraderie and deep life journey that it is there. I think certainly for coaches, there's like the intense, high scrutiny, high stress job at a program like that. But there's also like the gift of mentoring and pouring into young lives. I say that because I think that no one label fits any one program or any one division. Even in our league, I think it moves between high stakes, nationally ranked programs in some sports to kind of a bunch of teenagers playing and having the best friends of their lives who will be in their wedding someday. And at times a business, and at times a pre-professional kind of incubator. Where does faith come into all that? That's a complicated question, man. You know, I was thinking recently about the role of religious officials, or I guess the role of a chaplain in sports teams. I think, you know, most recently you get like Sister Jean at Loyola University, and their team that made that great run last year in the NCAAs. And like, what role does someone like Sister Jean play? In one sense, I think that, you know, religion or religious officials are like a symbol for a team, a symbol of hope, a symbol of peace, maybe a reminder that there's something bigger than this, or that there's someone bigger looking out for us, protecting us from injury, protecting us from kind of any kind of harm along the way. And it's nice to have that symbol present. Similarly, someone may wear a religious symbol on them, whether it's a kippah or a cross or a kufi, something like that. Sometimes having someone on the bench or right behind the bench who's a nun or a priest at Villanova or another kind of chaplain sitting in the crowd is a good symbol. They're also kind of a lucky charm. You know, I think sometimes people just want the chaplain on the bus because maybe it will help us when, you know, athletes are notoriously superstitious. And, you know, if the chaplain is at the right game and the miracle happens, the chaplain will probably be at every game going forward, especially when you need it. So kind of lucky charm. But there's also the kind of practical sort of counselor that I think religious officials can be for a program, whether it's just another kind of adult in the room to talk to kind of bounce ideas off of, to kind of put an arm around a kid and encourage them after a tough day or after a tough season. Or sadly, when crises happen, you know, and programs around the country have the hard stretches. You know, we've had a couple hard, painful losses in a couple of our athletic teams here at Penn. And in our office has kind of been present to journey with the coaches and the teammates after tragedy like that. So I think that there's this kind of practical role that religion and faith people can play around athletic programs.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a lot to unpack, but certainly it's interesting to see. Some people have made the comparison, or sometimes ruefully, between sports and religion, as if you know, sports were religion for some, or vice versa, disconcertingly. But certainly at Penn, there's more. It's cool to have seen basketball mean more than just a game to folks. I think at times, you know, we can look at athletes and, you know, maybe not realize that they're students first. Certainly they're not, you know, again, they're not widgets on a box score. You know, they're trying to get something out of this. And as spectators, I guess we're all, you know, we're all secondary and necessarily so in that equation. But, you know, if we add anything to make it that much more special and that much more of a communal experience, you know, maybe that's where we come in, I guess.
You're totally right, man. You know, it's one of the interesting things about being in Philly, and I think this happens in other cities too, but you sort of sit down with some of the old heads in the city and get them going about the old days in the Palestra when you could get in there and get a doubleheader for 50 cents and kind of, you know, watch basketball for 4 or 5 hours there. Yeah. You know, and they start telling those crazy old stories, which are great. I have a a relative through marriage who talks about like sneaking in through the palestra to kind of watch games with the kid, which seems ridiculous and crazy. But like, those are such cherished memories for them that it becomes something deep, a part of their inner lives, you know? And so like, they're obviously not worshipped in basketball in the area here, but it really touches their heart, touches their soul. But like you said, dude, that can put a real pressure on a kid, on an 18-year-old, or a coach, or a program, so that, you know, when you sort of ride with them, we're so high and so excited, and after winning the championship, it's amazing, and it's kind of euphoric, ecstasy, kind of worshipful moment. But when you go on like an 8-game losing streak, or you're last in the league, oh, it feels like, you know, the bottom of life has fallen out and God has abandoned you. That's a lot of pressure for a teenager to carry. They, with the hopes and the emotional welfare of a city on their back, that is tough, man, and quite frankly, unfair. And they, you know, in one sense, some athletes kind of know what they sign up for, and they want the big stage, and they enjoy that opportunity. But it's hard when you get old heads pulling them over and telling them what they need to be doing on the court, bad mouthing them in writing or somewhere. That's a lot. That's hard and unfair.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's where the discomfort comes in for a lot of folks, I think, with programs where brand name programs, I think, you know, the Blue Bloods, where we all know, you know, you think of the school and then you think of the team right away. You know, where, you know, you maybe you think of the coach right off. I always thought it was healthy that, you know, during my time at Penn, there were, you know, a fair, you know, a pretty wide contingent of fellow students that didn't follow in athletics, didn't follow basketball, didn't know who Jerome Allen is, despite him having been the coach at the time and one of the best players in program history. It was, you know, it had its place. And it wasn't, it wasn't more than it was meant to be, I guess. But yeah, it, at the same time, you know, I guess it's striking that balance. Something that's meaningful and something that's, perhaps takes on a little bit too great importance, more so maybe for alumni and the old heads.
I think if you ask the average student, hey, did you know about that? I think the response would be, oh, I didn't know we had a squash team, period. Cool, neat. Do you know anyone on the team? Nope. And a part of that is just the nature of the sport. Squash was never on TV. You know, it's not, there are no like celebrity athletes in it and all that. But I always felt like that's kind of rough. And I think I'd love to celebrate the students who are at, you know, the tippy top of their game in the whole nation, in some ways the world. And for them to kind of not even be noticed by the kids sitting next to them in econ, that's rough. And I think for big ticket sports like basketball, football, you know, track, lacrosse, those kind, when they're really thriving and they're not getting shine on campus, that's like the inverse of what we're talking about. That's kind of painful too. And so it's hard to really find that balance. And hard to find a balance as an athlete. You know, I think was great at this. Really was Jerome. You know, I think Jerome really underappreciated as a coach. You know, he was obviously one of the best, if not the best, Penn player to ever come through our program. He was also a fantastic coach and was a bridge between, you know, that kind of Dunphy era and, you know, the coach after Fran to what Steve is doing now, and really, I think, got the program back on track. But Jerome, I think, was such a decent, and is such a decent being who never let the celebrity go to his head. He played in the NBA and played overseas and, you know, all that, but was also just, you know, poo from North Philly at times and still took SEPTA around and still was, and did, does so many good things, community service-wise in the community, still runs camps, still does all that kind of stuff, but never needed the attention around it. And that trickled down to the players to kind of really create what I think still is in the program, a deeply humble program. So even after the championship last year, even after the Big Five championship this year, they are humble guys. And that has to do with Steve and Matt and Joe and Brad and Trey and all of them now. I really think Jerome helped also establish that, as did Dunphy before that. But whose lasting impact on the program, I think, is still here in very positive ways.
Well, I think that's a great point, especially about Jerome Allen, that I came to realize is there's only so much that information we have to judge a program. We see the wins and losses. And I think that was something that was, a struggle for fans during the Jerome Allen era. But college athletics is supposed to be so much more than that. And we're never going to, and actually with Allen, we saw folks, players that went through the program, young men who went through the program, like Darnell Foreman or, Miles Jackson Cartwright, talk about, what it meant to them for Jerome Allen to be in their lives, to have recruited them and to be their coach. And, I don't think that's something that, an average fan is going to ever get a chance to evaluate or appreciate.
I think you're right. You think about someone like Dow Jack, who, is not one of our scoring legends in a sense, and was a strong character presence on the bench and on the team. And had a couple breakout games and stuff, but, Jerome coached Dow around the nonprofit that Dow started, and coached Dow about sort of how to be a man, how to be a leader and a servant off the court in ways that Dow is a legend now. Dow came back and was sitting on a panel with Joe Biden and Jeb Bush and our university president. and Jerome really helped coach that out of him. He helped coach his jump shot and his three-pointer too. But really, Dow is a legend because of Pooh in some way, obviously because of Dow's character and his resilience, his just basic decency. But, he to me is as much a part of Jerome's legacy as is Darnell or Tony or any of those guys.
Yeah, and on the flip side, it's a great point about the squash program too. I remember starting my sports writing career. That's, I think, too much gravitas in the word career in that sense. But started sports writing at the Daily Pennsylvanian, and got assigned, freshman year to the squash beat, just because that's what that's what incoming freshmen into the DP called the Postum DP Sports, that's what you started, was on the squash beat, because that's kind of the first that's the first rung on the ladder. And it's tough because Coach Jack Wyatt, he knows the drill. Who's covering the team? It's not the juniors and seniors. It's every single year. It's a freshman who's just learning, maybe doesn't know what squash even is. And, there's that extra layer of patience that all the coaches and players have to have. It's the little things, I guess, when you're not a big ticket sport, and that's an excellent point.
I love that story, man. I wish you could share that more and give hope to the wide-eyed 18-year-old who is sent to go on the road up to New Hampshire and to cover a team that's not getting a whole lot of attention. Well, part of it is you pay your dues before you get the big ticket and can go to the NCAAs with your team. But the other side is also take. end up being like the lead sports writer for the school paper, and then ultimately a professional after that. That's a great story, man.
Well, yeah, and quite often you just you know, the team's going up the squash team's going up to Cornell. You're probably just calling them and didn't even see the game.
Oh no!
You're just going off of the off of the stats. So yeah, that's a great story. What's going on with Penn Squash right now? And I think it's just a lesson, I suppose, to keep all sports in proper perspective. And when a team is excelling, then widen that perspective out as much as you can. Yeah. What are some of your favorite moments, Penn basketball moments over the years, whether as chaplain or during your time as a student at Penn? Any moments of triumph or jubilation or really anything stand out to you?
Oh yeah, man. I mean, you know, recently, obviously, you know, beating Nova in the Palestra was a classic that I think we'll talk about for a long time. And then winning the whole thing outright last week against Temple. I think the championship last year from the playoffs was wonderful to see, you know, Darnell's shot at the end of the first half and him run off. It was kind of one of those iconic moments that we'll talk about forever. See him climb up on the rim. Those are special. Yeah, I remember Jackson Donahue's shot to get into the playoffs during that first, you know, Ivy playoff was an amazing one that so glad we got good video on. So that was fun to see. But then the other sort of not big story, I remember I think Zach Rosen's last year, I believe they were up at Harvard, and they were kind of recovering from a hard start to the season. And I want to say Harvard was ranked at that point. And Zach was just zoning, man. And he kind of willed the team to a major upset toward the end of the very, very special career. And I remember sort of seeing the emotion on him, Rob Belcourt, and all their faces after that game. That ultimately didn't mean a whole lot, you know, NCAA-wise or anything like that, but really showed what they could do. And ended up being one of the early big wins for Jerome. I won't forget that. Or before that, you know, seeing Coco and Yugona and AB in that kind of era and the wins they were doing. But, you know, I came around when it really was just a two-team conference, just Penn and Princeton back and forth every single year. And those games, I mean, I was classmates with Michael Jordan, Matt Lengel, and Jeff Owens, and those guys. And I, you know, the cluster was always rocking back then and very hot and sweaty. And those were wars with Princeton. And I, you know, I remember all those games, running on the court, throwing streamers, seeing the guys go to the tournament. Those are wonderful years. Kind of my first games, though, we're watching Jerome and Matt Maloney and all those guys play when we really were a national powerhouse was probably a little too strong, but really were a very dangerous first round team for any major program that would dare play us. Those are fun times, and I think we've kind of climbed back to that. As well, you know, us and Harvard and Princeton really are always a trap game for any team, more than a trap game, like kind of a threat. You know, we beat up a whole lot of mid-major teams regularly, and then they're not upsets, which is fun to sort of see the team get to that level. So it's been a joy. You know, I think I would add, it's a very male-centered story there that I'm talking about. I really love seeing the women's team really grow to what they are. And so I think seeing, you know, Sydney Stepanovich and Michelle Mochetti and the kind of dominance they showed is at one point the best front court in the city, you know, men, women, college and pro, which was sort of fun to see them and see Sydney and all of them kind of make it to the tournament and their wins over Princeton. Those were just wonderful times. I remember Diana Caramonico back in early 2000s and kind of the very strong games that she had. You know, with the stuff that Mike and all the coaches and the women's program have done, I'm not sure it gets the heralding and the shine that it deserves. I mean, Mike's really brought defense in the country. You know, really, it's fun to see the Ivy women broadly, you know, Penn, Princeton, Brown, Harvard, Yale, like really be strong programs nationally. It's just fun to watch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I agree that Penn women's basketball has been, I mean, I remember my senior year was the year they broke through and won at Jadwin to clinch the Ivy Championship, the Alyssa Barron-led team.
She was a warrior, my goodness. Yes.
Indeed. In 14 and kind of really, that was a statement win in the history of the program, certainly under McLaughlin. And since we're talking about perception on campus, what's been the buzz in the last couple of years, especially with the championship on the men's side this past year on campus for Penn basketball?
Yeah, you know, I think every single student knows and is excited about it. And, you know, we've had some low years where the little student section was like, you know, 30 or 40 deep. And now, you know, it's packed. And, you know, they're red and blue crew and they have their t-shirts and their giveaways and their rollout signs and stuff like that. So, I think every single undergraduate student knew our championship run last year. We all swaggered around campus and lorded it over our friends in our peer schools. And I think, you know, after the Big Five championship, it was certainly after the Nova win and after the whole championship, I think it's the buzz of campus. And the staff talk about it, and it's on like the front page of the website and on the email blasts that go out to parents and all of our, the president, Amy Govman, is tweeting about it, which is and it's on her Instagram feed, which is amazing. It's a high buzz, and on both sides, men and women's programs, they really are kind of campus celebrities. And their part of it is they're just taller than every other student, and they kind of stick out a little bit. But they also, people love them. And it's fun to see A.J. Broder walking around, or see Aaliyah Parker walking around, because people saw them on TV and saw them, like, playing Kansas in the national championship, and that's amazing. And you'll see other players say, good luck this weekend, or, you know, way to go, it was awesome. Like, it's nice to see that. You know, I teach a Black History course, and Antonio Woods in my class. And it was fun to see him walk in, and people call him champ when he walked in after the Big Five win, which is cute. And it's not just them. We have, you know, a guy who runs track and broke the school record for the 60-meter dash also in our class. And see other athletes say, hey, man, I heard you broke the record. Congrats. And they're all dwelling it because we got work to do in class and all that. But it's really neat to see peers celebrate peers in the same way we celebrate. You know, we have a senior who won a Rhodes Scholarship this year as well. We clap for her when she walks in a room. We also clap for, you know, AJ and the guys when they walk in a room too. We're small enough that you see everybody walking around campus and everybody knows somebody on the team.
Yeah, that's a great story. Yeah, champ. I mean, that moments like that mean a lot. I would imagine.
Amazing.
Yeah,
you never forget it.
Yeah. Well, that kind of communal experience is what it's all about, I guess.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. Well, Chaz Howard, thank you so very much for taking time out to impart so much generous insight and wisdom, and very grateful for all that you do at Penn, and thanks so much for coming on.
No, you're generous, man, and keep up the good work. You know, again, the last word I would say is I really appreciate what you all do with the site and social media and podcast. You've created a love in me for the other Ivy teams. You know, historically, I only heard about them when they came to town. But now I love following along, you know, seeing the all-time leading scorer at Cornell and hearing what Tommy is doing up at Harvard. Like, I love cheering for our peer schools, too, because I feel like I know them through the work that y'all are doing in the analysis and the great journalism that you do. thank you.
Oh, well, that's very kind. I'm happy to have grown to love all eight ivies. So I'm glad that I'm glad that anyone who follows the site is a fan of all the great goings on league wide. There's certainly a lot to cover. That's for sure. Never a shortage of stuff to cover. So, well, thank you so much again for coming on, and stay warm out there. Okay.
Yeah, you too, my man.